There are some slides or very nice picture.
I remain a cow. There we go. I'm not always a cow.
Okay, the cow is gone.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Just go ahead.
Yeah, please.
Okay. Good stuff. Right. So I'm going to talk about what we've done with the LZ collaboration in terms of sustainability. Before I do that, I'll do the obligatory introduction slides to what LZ is. We're a direct dark matter experiment based in South Dakota in an old gold mine. We've been running for 4 years now, and we'll probably keep taking data for at least another 4 years. There's about 250 of us, primarily in Europe and the US, but we've also got people in Asia now, so we're quite spread around the world. So what's sustainability in LZ? Well, we actually started up a working group late last year with the goals of quantifying what the environmental impact of running our experiment was and explore ways to reduce this. And I'll come to later as to beyond LZ how this helps. But within LZ, we essentially broke this down into three sections. We've got the operations, so the actual detector running. Then we've got the computing, so analyzing our data, and then we've got the in-person meetings. So this isn't exhaustive, but we have taken these to be the big three. So since we started up, we've started looking at all of these. With the first one, we tried to tackle being operations. So the hard thing with this was when we built the experiment, we didn't really think about energy usage all that much. We just gave an initial number for this will be the peak load. We don't care about what the steady state we use is. So actually getting this number has been incredibly difficult. And it's a bit of a fudge. So in what we're considering here, we only look at our steady state contributions. So the stuff which is on all the time, we don't consider high energy calibration sources, and whatnot. But essentially this gives us numbers in the range of 44 to 66 kilowatts, and this is just on 24/7, 365 days. And where possible, we validate this with whatever monitoring we have. Then in our computing, we actually use two computing centers. We use NERSC in the US, which is our primary one, and then we have a secondary one, which is based on the grid. And we've monitored how much we're using here based upon essentially monitoring jobs. So all the ones in the US use Slurm as the batch system, and we're able to monitor the amount of energy used by each job and know how much storage we're using. And so we've been able to work out what the energy usage is running there. Similar story in the UK, apart from it's done on a site basis, and then we just take what fraction of jobs and storage we have there. And this gives us some numbers, which I'll come to later. And then for meetings, we typically host two meetings for the whole collaboration a year, which we alternate between the US and the UK. And essentially, since we started this working group, we've started properly recording, who's gone and how they got there. And so for our two most recent ones, we had one in UCLA where all of the 50 people who went reported, and we were able to, track their flights and work out how they got there. And for the one before, which was at Brown University, also in the US, where we didn't have full reporting, so we had to make some estimates, but it's about equivalent. So, nearly 90 tons of CO2 for these meetups. So we put all of that into a summary. That's what we've got here. And we've translated these into our tons of CO2 equivalents. So we're Around 500 tons a year is what we're putting out, based upon different scenarios, which I'll let people read into on their own time. But the point of having this number is we can now start to think about how to mitigate certain bits. So I'm only going to briefly show one, which is this, which is experimenting with different types of meetings. So for the UCLA one, what we did as a trial was we looked at when some other meetings that people in our collaboration would want to go to, and we put our collaboration meeting around that. So we put it after a dark matter conference and before one of the giant US ones. And we calculated that saved about 12 tons. Another thing we're looking at is this hubs model where you go to somewhere local. And so just to kind of summarize this, we're about 2 tons of CO2 per year per author, with operating the detector being the largest and the second largest on flights. All of this will be used and taken into account for the next experiment, which we're planning now, which is XLZD, because that, if it's in the UK, we've got the target of being net zero in operations. So everything we learn here, we can take forward there. So it'll be easier to adapt now, essentially. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sam. If there are also any questions, you could also have a look. I would have one otherwise. Since you're talking a lot about flights, do you think this is easy to reduce given the fact that you're a collaboration?
Mixed. Depends who you ask. We've kind of find it goes in waves of the younger you are, the more keen you are to travel. And then there's like a plateau period where you're happy not, and then suddenly you ramp up and want to hang out with all your old mates again. So we think it's definitely realistic to get down to one international one a year. Which is what we're pushing for now, and beyond that, go for a hubs model.
Okay. I see also Greg has raised his hand.
Yeah, I have a question about the carbon footprint of the xenon itself, because xenon is only present at 10 to the minus 8 in the atmosphere, and if you need new xenon, the distillation cost is probably quite high. I mean, I know the same distillation process makes liquid oxygen, liquid nitrogen, but is that factored
Not
into your
in
calculus at
this,
all?
but in for XLZD, we've started doing full carbon life cycle assessments, and for that, we are talking to the people who we buy xenon from to get those numbers.
Okay, thanks.
Right, thank you. Then with that, I think we can also move on to Flash Talk. So, Martin, if you're around, you could start sharing.